Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
From record-breaking temperatures both at home and abroad to multiple wildfires across Europe with over a million hectares burned, what does this summer tell us about climate change? Well, for more, I'm joined on the line by John Sweeney, climatologist and emeritus professor at Maynooth University. Hello, John.
Good morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for being with us. Will we look at Ireland first? Because we know Met Aran recorded above average temperatures in July, and the hottest day was the 12th of July, where we had 31.1 degrees, people might remember. That was Mount Dillon in Roscommon. What's your assessment of our Irish summer, firstly, and what does it tell us about weather patterns?
Well, I think we have to await the conclusions of Met Aran in the next few days as to the extent to which this was the hottest ever summer in Ireland since records began. But we know that in a nearby UK, they're already close to the point of declaring that. So I don't need telling your listeners that this has been an exceptional summer, not necessarily the driest, but certainly one of the hottest we've ever had. And the good news, I suppose, to begin with, is that it hasn't brought some of the extremes that we've seen in continental Europe in terms of fires, for example. We lost about less than 1,000 acres due to wildfires this year, and that's about average, which says a lot about the responsibility of the Irish public and indeed of the authorities in following the guidelines and not putting places under threat during any of the, I think, 13 alerts that we've had, most of them actually in that dry April that we had this year. But that hasn't been the case in the rest of Europe, as you say. And in fact, Europe has just experienced its worst ever wildfire season with over a million hectares. That's about half the size of Leinster burned this year, which is about twice as much as last year. It means, of course, that not just the removal of trees, but also the emissions of carbon dioxide from those burning vegetation sources, about 39 million tonnes of CO2 going into the atmosphere from those wildfires. And that, of course, you'll have seen on the headlines in the media, has been associated with deaths. We remember the terrible deaths, of course, in California earlier this year. But it also means that Europe is beginning to show signs of acute fire risk during the hot summers as climate warming proceeds. And that's quite a problem for the future. It's not just the climate, of course, that's causing this. In many parts of Europe, if you go on holiday, you'll see the way in which the rural environs have been somewhat deserted as young people move to the cities. So some of the fire breaks, some of the maintenance of fire breaks that we saw in earlier generations are being neglected. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, we know that in many parts of the Mediterranean, they've had an exceptionally dry winter, about 14% less rainfall this winter. And that has created the conditions for dryness in the spring in those neglected rural areas. So, it doesn't take much to create an inferno farm.
So, John, that lack of
the levels of over 40 degrees that we saw in many parts of Europe this particular summer.
John, so the risk factor I'm not sure if John can hear me there.
Climate change is accentuating that considerably.
Okay, John, I'm not sure if you can hear me, but just in what you were saying there about the lack of rainfall in the winter, and I see that those wildfires in places like Turkey and Greece and Cyprus were more intense, over 20% more intense. Does that relate back to those conditions building through the winter, through the spring and into the very dry summer?
Yes, indeed it does. And in fact, when you do the attribution studies that are now so common on climate extremes, you find that those kinds of conditions are now five times more likely this year than they would have been in a pre-industrial climate, a climate the 1.3 degrees cooler than it is today. So we're putting, if you like, environment on steroids in many ways with climate change, accentuating the risks, accentuating the vulnerability also of those environments. So it's a combination of both the dry winters and the extremely hot summers acting on an environment which is increasingly vulnerable to fire risk. And that has begun to threaten some of our big cities, even in Europe as well. And that's perhaps the most worrying thing for the future, that we may have to spend enormous amounts of money in Europe to protect against those fires reaching big population centres.
But the dry winter last year, it doesn't give us an indication as to what might happen this year. I mean, it doesn't necessarily follow, does it, that there will be a dry winter in those parts of Europe affected in that way last year?
No, it doesn't. But the models are consistently showing a desiccation of the Mediterranean occurring as part of climate change. It's rather like the Saharan anticyclone moving north. So we don't get the same kind of tendency for wet winters and indeed for even modest summers that we've had in the past. But there is no correspondence between what happened last year and what may well happen this year. But what will be the same is the vulnerability of the environment in terms of growing vegetation. It just may not be quite so dry this time next year.
So how are we doing then in terms of tackling this? I mean, we had set the temperature increase target in the Paris Agreement at 1.5 degrees back in 2015, but we're very close to that now, aren't we?
Yes, we have established criteria under two agreements. One is our international agreements under the EU effort-sharing arrangements. And there we're failing miserably, both on an annual basis and since 2021, cumulatively, to meet our obligations under that target. And of course, your listeners will be aware of the consequences that may arise financially down the road from that. But secondly, we also have domestic legislation to observe from the 2021 Act. And here we're also exceeding the glide path that we needed to meet our carbon budget requirements. We now have 4 years of the first five-year carbon budget. And in all our sectors, we're over 80%. So we're not going to meet our first five-year carbon budget, which is a legally required thing under the Climate Act. And that means that any excess that we do achieve, if you like, under that, will be carried forward to the next 5 years, making the next 5 years very difficult. So the idea of, you know, hoping that this problem will go away, kicking the can down the road a bit, is something that increasingly is untenable. We're seeing legislation now beginning to go through the Irish courts. I think we have four climate cases already up for consideration in the next few months. And that follows a lot of litigation at European level from such as the senior people or the older people, if you like, in Switzerland, who has established human rights aspects to climate change litigation. And that's what perhaps will drive change and regulation in the years to come, even here in Ireland. Because at the moment, while we pay lip service to our obligations under our own domestic legislation, we're not really delivering the goods on that. We may well be forced in the future to take more radical action if we don't act today to obviate the kind of problems that we're facing down the road.
Well, John, it's good to talk to you as always, and we will be discussing this in more detail coming into the next couple of weeks, because the climate budget, which ends at the end of this year, will need to be replaced by a new one, as John was telling us, a new five-year plan, and that is due to come on the Dáil agenda in the coming weeks. So we'll hear lots more about the mitigating efforts in the next little while. That's John Sweeney, climatologist. Now, Dr. Paddy Barrett is going to take on some of the social media myths around heart disease and explain the relationship between cholesterol and your heart. We have lots of questions coming in for Paddy, but keep them coming. We'll put them all to him. If you have a heart health question, the WhatsApp number you need, 0870 32 32 32.
Get in touch on WhatsApp, 0870 32 32 32.